seated. Good afternoon. Welcome to the Second Court of Appeals. Your panel this afternoon is, to my right, Justice Sue Walker. To my left, Justice Bob McCoy. I'm Leanne Dauphineau. We have two cases set for oral submission at 1:30. Then we'll take a break, and then we'll hear the 3 o'clock docket. And it's my understanding that nobody is here from the 3 o'clock docket, so they haven't checked in. That's okay, because there will be a break. I understand both sides are ready on the first case. Is it right? Okay, you want to call the case, please?
The court will now call Weatherford Texas Hospital Company, LLC and all, versus Catherine F. Smart. May it please the court, Mr. Ty Bailey will argue for the appellant. Mr. Bart Bear will argue for the appellate.
All right. Ty?
May it please the court. Is there a requirement in Texas that a claim against a hospital, a claim that implicates standards of safety, must be directly related to health care in order for that claim or that lawsuit to fall within the parameters?
How about indirectly?
Your Honor, I do not believe that that requirement is within the law either.
So if I trip over the parking block out in the parking lot and sue the hospital, I have to come up with a doctor who is familiar with the standard of care of parking lots in hospitals.
No, you do not.
Okay.
You have to come up with an expert report dealing with safety standards. There's no requirement that it must be a doctor to deal with safety standards. If you are claiming a lawsuit against a physician and you need an expert report, you certainly need a physician under those standards. And if you are saying that there is medical causation, you're going to need a medical doctor to testify as to causation. But as to the standard of care for a hospital, you certainly can provide a report from someone who is a non-physician but who is familiar with standards of care with regard to the allegations you are making.
Where does it say a non-physician can provide that report?
I believe Chapter 74 under 351 is the expert report requirement. I can't name off the top of my head the subsection dealing with the expert reports, but it certainly sets forth with regard to the standard of care. For instance, in a classic medical negligence case, oftentimes a nurse sets forth the standard of care for a nurse in a hospital in an expert report. I think the only time a physician is specifically called for is dealing with the issue of medical causation. Obviously, if you're alleging an injury that was caused, you need a medical doctor to testify as to causation. But as far as standards of care, you can have a non-physician if you're not suing a physician per se.
But I think that in the Chapter 74, the definition of expert report is one that has a standard of care, breach, and causation. And I'm not seeing how that dovetails with a premises liability claim.
Well, I think, Your Honor, you have to look at the definition of healthcare liability claim, and specifically 74001A13. The courts have said there are three requirements there. You have to have a healthcare provider named as a defendant is the first requirement. The third requirement is proximate cause. You have to allege that the harm actually was caused by the conduct, an act or omission of the defendant. But the second element, and the element that is the issue here, is dealing with the claim itself. And the court have said there are four categories, four prongs, if you will, of health care claims, ones that are related to health care, ones that are related to medical care, which is separate and apart. The third one, which I think this case falls under, ones that deal with safety. And the fourth one, the professional or administrative services that are directly related to health care. I think that's what the Supreme Court said last year in the Texas West Oaks case, is that phrase, directly related to health care, under the grammar rule of the last antecedent clause, modifies only administrative or professional services. And I think, Your Honor, in the dissent that you wrote in the Ollie opinion is instructive on this case, in which the issue there was a patient who slipped and fell getting out of a bathtub at a hospital. Motion to dismiss was filed. Trial court denied it. Came up to this court. This court said it was not a health care liability claim.
Well, if you read the dissent in Ollie, then you know that my position was that in order to have a jury charge issue in that case, you would have had to say a reasonable and prudent person in the same or similar circumstances, how would they have cared for this woman post-surgery, post-knee surgery, which necessarily implied conduct by healthcare providers, the nurses in the hospitals, in caring for her. And so it wasn't just a negligence case because it necessarily implied the conduct of a healthcare provider. But here, I'm not seeing any difference if the parking lot is the parking lot of a healthcare provider, the parking lot of Walmart, or the parking lot of McDonald's. I mean, how is the fact that the defendant is a healthcare provider implicate the standard of care for a parking lot?
Because I think that's what the statute says when it talks about standards of safety. Those standards of safety are not tied.
Okay, so what if you had a doctor on an emergency call driving to the hospital? He's on his way to work. He's a healthcare provider. He's on his way to the emergency room, and he has a wreck. Is that a healthcare claim now?
I don't think that would be under those circumstances.
Why?
Because I think you're not looking at standards of safety applicable to the healthcare provider in that situation. I think as
that's what I just exactly said here. I don't think you're looking at standards of safety applicable to a healthcare provider. I think you're looking at standards of safety applicable to a parking lot, no matter who is the owner of the parking lot, whether a healthcare provider or a non-healthcare provider. Just as in the driving incident, you're looking at the conduct of the party driving and whether their conduct was negligent, regardless of whether they're a healthcare provider or not a healthcare provider. I don't think that just because someone is a healthcare provider that every act they take that implicates safety outside the arena of the OR or the arena of the hospital building can be construed as a healthcare liability claim.
Well, I don't think everyone can, but I think in this case, with these set of facts, I think, and again, going back to the Ollie case, what the Texas Supreme Court said in that case, when they found it was a healthcare liability claim, said that the essence of Ollie's claims center on the failure of Harris Methodist to act with a proper degree of care to furnish a dry floor.
But let's read exactly what they say in Ollie.
Okay.
It is the underlying nature of Ollie's claim that determines whether the claim is for a departure from accepted standards of safety related to an act that should have been performed or furnished by Harris. For, to, or on behalf of Ollie during Ollie's medical care, treatment, or confinement, which we don't have here, and services a hospital provides its patients necessarily include those services required to meet patients' fundamental needs as cleanliness, whether that cleanliness obtained by means of hospital employees cleaning or bathing the patient.
Talking
about the services provided a patient, which we don't have here.
We don't, but Texas West Oak says you don't have to be dealing with a patient. That's the difference. Ollie, the set of facts, dealt with a patient and furnishing a clean floor to a patient. What the plaintiff in this case says is we have different sets of standards for patients and non-patients, that you have to, if you furnish a clean floor to a patient, that can be a healthcare liability claim. But the exact same floor in the exact same building for a non-patient, there's a different law that applies, is the plaintiff's position in this case. I think Texas West Oak says you can't do that. You can't separate out patients from non-patients because the Texas legislature changed Chapter 74 from Article 4590I from the term patient to the term claimant. So as long as the person bringing the claim falls within the definition of claimant, then the Chapter 74 scheme applies. And I think that's what we have here.
And Williams, clearly there is an indirect relationship between health care provided. Correct? It may not be direct, but it's indirect. And let me just read again from Williams. The dispute between Williams and Rest Oaks is at its core over the appropriate standards of care owed to this mental health professional in treating and supervising a psychiatric patient at the mental hospital. What services, protocols, supervision monitoring and equipment were necessary to satisfy the standards and whether such specialized standards were breached. It would blink reality, which is a new phrase for me, to conclude that no professional mental health judgment is required to decide what those should be and whether they were in place at the time of the Williams injury. That's kind of a long way from a slip and fall from a non-patient, just a visitor, to me.
Certainly the facts are different from Williams in this case. That was not a slip and fall. That was dealing with a technician who was dealing with a patient at the time. But I think that the same logic applies. I think the Twiley case out of Texarkana that comes up with this phrase indirectly related to health care, it's reading a new requirement into the statute, and I think in and of itself arguments can be made that any conduct at a hospital is indirectly related to health care. Certainly this case, the facts of the Smart case are indirectly related to health care.
How is that?
But for the fact that Mrs. Smart was visiting a patient who, in the emergency department, who was obtaining health care and medical care, she wouldn't have been on the premises. She wouldn't have been there.
So if I'm delivering light bulbs to the hospital, then that connects to medical care, because they've got to have light bulbs if the nurses are going to properly care for the patients. And they've got to have light bulbs if they're going to perform surgery. So I'm delivering light bulbs, and that's connected to health care?
I think we get a bit attenuated there, because every building requires light bulbs. Those aren't specific to health care. The whole purpose of the visit was specific to the health care. If we're making an argument,
I think that's stretching it.
I think it's stretching.
Suppose
it's
to sing a happy, a musical happy birthday, and the person just happens to be in the hospital. That makes it medical care?
No, I don't think that it does, Your Honor. But I think that's the slippery slope we get down if we say it has to be at least indirectly related to health care. What does indirectly mean? It's not defined anywhere for us, and it's certainly not within the statute. What the statute says is, it only has to be professional or administrative services that are directly related to health care. The directly related to health care modifies only professional or administrative service. There's no requirement of directly related or even indirectly related with regard to safety standards of care. And I think that's what we have here.
Well, let's return to where we started this whole discussion about an expert. First of all, is it Twiley or Twilly? I don't know.
Probably Twilly. If I said Twiley, I'm mistaken. There's two L's. So.
How do you explain PET denied from Twiley's indirect or direct analysis?
I can't explain that, Your Honor. I don't know why the court took that. Well, but
then
the,
let's go on to the problem of finding an expert, which is where this began, and let's read from that case.
Sure.
And you tell me where I'm off base here. To require an expert report in this case would amount to an exercise in futility. Section 74.351 sets forth the requirement that, in a health care liability claim, a claimant shall serve on each party one or more expert reports for each physician or health care provider, here the hospital, against whom a claim is made. The expert opinion regarding whether a health care provider departed from the standard of care, that's what we have here, or safety, must come from an expert qualified to testify under the requirements of 74.402. 70.402 essentially requires that in a suit involving health care liability claim against the health care provider we have here, a qualified expert must be practicing health care in a field of practice that involves the same type of care or treatment as that delivered by the defendant. Now, if that's correct, that means you've got to get a practicing physician to testify about, in our example,
the floors
or the bump out in the parking lot.
Well, I don't know that it goes that far. I think you have to get someone who is familiar with the standard of care for that issue. And I think in a case like that, you could come up with an expert who said, here's what is required to keep a floor dry.
That is not a person that is practicing health care. A qualified expert must be practicing health care, so that's just kind of written out of the expert requirement?
No, I don't think that's quite the case, Your Honor, okay. But practicing health care is not defined as the same as practicing medical care, and it's not defined as a physician has to do that. And I think you have to look at the definition of, well, what is practicing health care? And I don't know that the statute fleshes all that out for us.
So a janitor practices health care?
I'm not saying that, Your Honor.
Well, who mops the floor?
Well, obviously that's who does that, but I think he doesn't make the decision about what the standards are for keeping the floor clean, how the building is maintained, that sort of thing. I mean, I think there's lots of folks, whether they're OSHA experts, whether they're healthcare regulation experts, whether they're nursing experts, whether they're plant manager experts, who might be able to touch on those issues.
Plant managers practice medicine or practice in the field?
I'm not saying they practice medicine at all, Your Honor.
I have a question. You know, the purpose of this whole, the whole purpose of the statute is to have a expert report that informs the defendant of the conduct called into question and provides a basis for the trial court to determine that the claims have merit. And that's what really the purpose is supposed to be for an expert report. So what is it about the claims against you, against your client, that you don't understand that you need an expert report to tell you what the claims are? I mean, that to me kind of goes to the gist of the situation. Is there something about the claims that is unclear that you need an expert report to show in the pleadings the nature of the claims against you? So,
Your Honor, I think the analogy there would be to a res ipsa case, whereas the petition itself says this happened and it's because of this reason, and those cases have been looked at under Chapter 74 scenario as well, where the same argument has been raised. Hey, you know what happened. We're just saying this. Why do we even need an expert? And the courts have said, even if it's a res ipsa case, you still need an expert to get past the 120-day expert report requirement. And I think that's the same situation here. Even if you say, boy, this is just obvious as can be what the allegations are against you, just because it's obvious or it's open or it may seem on the surface we know what those allegations are, doesn't relieve them of the requirement to provide that expert report.
Then we're back to what expert report is going to tell you what you don't know, and that is there's a puddle of water on the floor and somebody needs to mop it up.
It may be a very simple expert report that they provide.
And what healthcare provider is going to, I mean, we're back, it's just circular, so. Anybody have any other questions? Thank you.
May it please the court. As I understand it, according to Weatherford Regional's argument, simply because somebody falls on their premise and there happened to be a hospital, then the Texas Medical Liability Act applies, and as a result, an expert report would be required. I don't believe, and they entirely rely on Williams, or West Oaks, I'm sorry, and I don't believe that's the holding in Williams. The holding was that, there were several, but among other things, pardon me, it was that a safety claim need not be directly related to health care. It didn't hold. There was no holding in West Oaks that there need be no connection whatsoever to health care. And that's what's pointed out in the Texarkana case, Twiley. Of course, Twiley involved a person with a couple different types of claims, an employee of the facility who fell off a ladder in one instance and in another instance tripped over a mound of concrete. And the Court of Appeals in that case held that there had to be at least some tether to health care to require, or for the claims to be defined as health care liability claims. That case went, there was a petition for review filed, and As Justice, you pointed out, the petition was denied, and then a rehearing on that denial was denied again last Friday. You know, in Appley's brief, there's some discussion similar to the line of questioning that took place a few minutes ago about what kind of expert should be required and what should be contained in the report. I don't see any way that I don't see a practical way that a practicing healthcare provider is going to write a report about a puddle of water in the waiting room of the emergency department at Weatherford Regional. That it's not a just result. It's not reasonable. And I know I'm being extremely brief, but I just don't see how West Oaks indicates that there be no connection to the provision of health care.
Are you aware of any cases where the act giving rise to the alleged negligence occurs outside the building of the hospital? I mean, I know we have Ollie, which was a slip and fall in the hospital room, and then it looks like we have Ross versus St. Luke's, which is a slip and fall by a non-patient in the lobby. And so now, in this case, we have a slip and fall outside the perimeter of the hospital building in the parking lot. And are you aware of any other cases? I'm not saying it has to be a slip and fall where the alleged act forming the basis of the purported health care liability claim occurred. I mean, it's counterintuitive that an action forming the basis of a health care liability claim could occur outside the building of the hospital. But are you aware of any cases?
I am aware of it. I can't think of the name of it, but the issue was not whether the case was a health care liability claim. The issue was whether the injured person was an invitee or a licensee on the property. And the incident happened outside in the park.
So it was treated as a premises liability claim.
Correct. And that was completely, it was an issue that was raised in this case. On another matter involving a summary judgment, and I know that the case is referenced in those briefs regarding the summary judgment, but I can't begin to tell you the name of the case.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Briefly, if I may, in reply, as far as cases taking place outside the building, first of all, the Smart case took place inside the building, the fall that Mrs. Smart had. But there is a case outside the building. That's the Sherman versus HealthSouth case. I think we cited in our brief. And that's the case where there was a patient who was put in a van leaving a clinic. And on the way home, the van driver hit the brakes. The patient was thrown while in the van vehicle, suffered damages, sued HealthSouth. And in that case, the Dallas Court of Appeals said, yes, in fact, that is a health care liability claim, citing the Texas West Oaks case. So that's, excuse me, that's the one case that I am aware of dealing with an issue of health care liability claims outside the premises.
What's the other name? It's not in the index of authorities. So
the case I cited, Sherman versus HealthSouth.
Oh, HealthSouth, okay.
Yes, 397 Southwest 3rd.
Oh, I see it.
869.
Oh, I guess I missed it.
Well, there.
Oh, I
it's
see.
Yeah,
got
it's,
it.
It's
got it.
Alexis.
I was looking
number.
At the Supreme Court. Got it. Okay.
Certainly, to conclude, it's our position not that every single time a healthcare provider faces a lawsuit, that it is a healthcare liability claim. The Texas Supreme Court itself said there very well may be cases where there's not. But In the Loazi case, or Loazege versus Serta, that came out a couple months after this, that's the case in which the Supreme Court said there is a presumption that it is a health care liability claim. And in fact, that case involved an alleged assault of patients. And the court said, based on the record before us, we can't overcome that presumption.
And, of course, the next sentence was talking about how to rebut the presumption.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think the court has set forth the manner in which you do that in that case, that you can try and rebut the presumption that it is a health care liability claim. And I think it's instructive that the court really has taken a different view and has carved out these assault cases or these intentional tort cases when they say that really gets into the an area where it may not be a health care liability claim.
Well, let's read what it says. But the presumption is necessarily rebuttable. In some instances, the only possible relationship between the conduct underlying a claim, here, water on the floor, and the rendition of medical services or health care will be the healthcare setting. That sounds like exactly what we have here. Let me read it again. The only possible relationship between the conduct underlying the claim, the water on the floor, and the rendition of medical services or healthcare will be the healthcare setting. That's exactly what we've got here, sounds like to me.
Well, I think to a certain extent that's true that we have a healthcare setting in that we're in the hospital,
right.
But I think we go back to safety standards, whereas that case was looking at medical care and healthcare specifically and whether or not there was a consent on the part of the patient. They were specifically looking at prongs one and two, medical care and healthcare and then medical care. Here we have a prong three case, a safety standards. Once they implicate the safety standards by saying you provided a dangerous condition, I think they pull themselves by their own pleadings, and I think that's what the Supreme Court said in Ollie. Those type of pleadings pull yourself into a Chapter 74 umbrella. Now, the Serta case, I think, says there's a presumption you can get out of that umbrella. I don't think we have that here. What they've done is said we have safety standards that have been implicated. They sued the healthcare provider, and they said the act or omission on the part of the healthcare provider, in this case the hospital, caused the harm. They've met all three elements of what a claim is defined as, a healthcare liability claim by statute. Because they've done that, they've taken on the burden of having to come up with the expert report. And I think that's what Texas West Oaks says, is that just because you're a non-patient, you still fall within the category of claimant. And we don't have separate systems for patients versus non-patients. And I think
so that's... So who would you say would be qualified under the statute to provide that expert report to provide you the information that you can't figure out from the pleadings?
I see those in cases we deal with hospitals all the time, whether it's policymaking, whether it's nursing care.
Not a nurse in the lobby. And so who would be qualified under the statute to provide that expert report to provide you the information you can't figure out from the pleadings?
I think a healthcare administration expert who deals with how to maintain hospitals, how to provide hospitals safe environments for patients and non-patients alike.
So you have to have an expert to tell you you shouldn't have water on the floor to figure it out from the pleadings.
Absolutely. It's just like if they would have alleged that a nurse stabbed a patient.
That's a tort. That's an intentional tort. That's already out.
Okay. Well, to the extent that they claim,
because they know anybody can figure out a nurse shouldn't stab a patient. I mean, that you figure that one out from the pleadings. You don't need an expert to provide you information you can't get from the pleadings. Isn't that the purpose of the expert report?
I think the purpose is to.
It's not just a gotcha to keep plaintiffs from suing hospitals, is it?
No, I don't believe it is, Your Honor. But I believe it does provide a framework in which you can't say, I'm a non-patient, therefore I don't have to provide an expert report, or my allegations are so simple and so straightforward that I don't have to provide an expert report. Once you've filed pleadings that pull yourself within the umbrella of Chapter 74, you have to come up with an expert report, no matter how simplistic we may think it is.
Why do you think the Supreme Court used the word directly why not just leave that word out?
I think they take directly right from the statute itself. Okay. The statute 7401A13 says directly related.
Okay. So
I don't think the Texas Supreme Court said if it's indirectly, if it's indirectly related. That came out of Texarkana. That's where the phrase indirectly came
from. Well, if they had left out directly, I mean, they put that word in there for some reason, I assume.
The legislature did, yes, Your Honor. I think we have to follow what the Supreme Court said in Texas West Oaks. That phrase, directly related to health care, modifies only professional or administrative services. It doesn't modify safety. You know, Justice Boyd, in the opinion that came out last month, took some issue with that in his concurrence, saying this could have been solved with an Oxford comma. But that wasn't done. And so we go by what the court said in West Oaks, that is the rule, the last antecedent. It only modifies professional or administrative services. It doesn't modify safety. And so once you have safety standards that have been implicated, they don't have to be directly related to health care, because that's not what the statute says. We have to take the legislature, legislative intent based on the words they used.
Any other questions? Thank you. We appreciate your argument. Sorry you had to come up here in the rain. Your case is submitted. You are free to go about your business, or you're welcome to stay here and watch the other two cases we have for oral argument until the rain leaves.